DJ and PK, it's 97.5 and 1280 The Zone. We're going to be talking with Tyson Alger, Oregon Ducks writer for The Athletic, coming up at 9:30. Usually we recap what's going on in the show. We've talked about a lot of stuff, but if you've joined us here lately, you didn't hear the earlier discussion in the show. Dennis Lindsay, Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations, meeting with the media, half-hour Zoom call, then he came on the big show. Of course, he was going to be asked about the relationship between Donovan and Rudy. And we can go down that road and what he said and what we think of what he said. But PK, I think the bigger discussion for the next 14 to 16 months, and we can't answer it now. I don't even know that we'll be able to answer it in 6 months. But there's a chance, if we go by NBA history, a club in this situation might make a decision in 6, 8, 10 months. Hey, we don't think we can sign this guy, or we don't want to sign this guy, so you make a trade. So I think the bigger discussion here is, and this is just one chapter, you know, how does a guy fit with his teammates, you know, off the court, but then also on the court. But if Rudy's going to be signed, you know, he's up for the Supermax because of, you know, what he's accomplished in the league and Defensive Player of the Year and the years he's been in the league. And there's a number, and we don't really know what it is. Dennis didn't really want to go anywhere near it. He got asked about it. But the Supermax number has been up in the low 40 millions of dollars for some players. Now, are they going to play the playoffs this year? The players get a percentage of the overall basketball revenue. Obviously, the basketball revenue is taking a hit. They're not going to be selling tickets during the playoffs this year. So that's a big hit. Are they going to play all the playoff games? Are they going to play the rest of the regular season? It's hard to know where that – but regardless of what the number is, it's going to be an enormous number and a huge financial commitment. The league, as you pointed out earlier, is changing. Is Rudy and the way Rudy plays the right way to play going forward? Just because everybody else is going to five out doesn't mean you have to. Maybe you do need to. But maybe you need to keep a shot blocker, play four out, and be the team that is different. Maybe that's the best path. But that's got to be figured out, and a relationship with Donovan is only one small piece of that puzzle. There's a dozen things going on here that have to be answered. And I think it's part of the reason we're so eager for them to get back to playing is to figure this out, because the closer you get to the end of the contract, you know, the more all this stuff matters. Where is the sport trending? What level can this team get to? You know, this team, and it's going to be weird, it's going to be an asterisk type season, right? But this team had a chance to finish third. They had a chance to finish sixth. You know, if you're third and if you win a playoff series, can you upset one of the top two and show that the arrow is pointed up? I get why people want to focus on the personalities, but this is the bigger question looming for the club.
It certainly is. It's far bigger than any little spat between Mitchell and Gobert, a couple of guys in their 20s. Get over it is the way I look at it. So if you got a problem, get in a room, talk it out. You're two decent people. Get over it and move on. I think that if that's the biggest problem that the Jazz have, well, they're in a pretty good spot. But as far as the money goes, you know, the $40 million, that seems outrageous to pay Gobert. I can't say he's a one-dimensional player. I know Locke would punch us in the face if he said that. But he's a one-dimensional offensive player. And what I mean by that is in today's game, you've got to be able to do a lot of different things offensively. Well, Gobert cannot do those things offensively. He's basically a put-back guy, roll the basket, put it up there, dunk type of guy. And so with that in mind, is he worth that kind of cash? And would you be willing to allocate such a high percentage of your payroll to not a one-dimensional player, but a one-dimensional offensive player? And to me, the answer is probably not. You know, that's just too much percentage. They're making outrageous amounts of money, so I can't get caught up in the actual literal dollar figure. I'm looking more at it. The percentage of the payroll is what I'm more interested in rather than the dollar figure, because whatever the dollar figure is, it's going to be astronomical relative to you and I and the guys who are listening, so we already know that. But the percentage of the payroll, you know, what percent does that come out to? Because that's what I need to know. What percent is he being paid of the payroll? Because then if you say just 30% is an odd, a round number, well, you know, I'm going to have to try to figure out a lineup or a roster then with 70%, and that's going to be more difficult. So I think the fact that he is a one-dimensional offensive player reduces his, or at least my desire, to pay him this super max money. Now, there's plenty of room below that that he would get and is worthy of getting and therefore would be a valuable contributor to your team, because they've won a lot of games and they're going to continue. They got Mitchell and Gobert here for the next few years, if that's what they decide. They're going to continue to be competitive. They're going to continue to be a playoff game. The goal, obviously, is to win it all. As Dennis said yesterday, to be the last team standing. That is, if that's not the goal, then I don't want to be bothered with this. We're all wasting our time. And I lived in Los Angeles and covered the Clippers, and that wasn't the goal. And you knew it wasn't the goal. So it's like, you know, what are you – you're providing entertainment. Okay, fine. But as a fan of whatever team I'm a fan of, I want them as the ultimate goal to be that last team standing that Dennis spoke of. That you may not get there, and you may take 50 years to get there. But as long as that's the goal and everybody is working towards that goal, you're going to have success. It may not be the ultimate success, particularly in this game where one or two guys can make a massive difference. And we've seen that. And these big cities have such a distinct advantage. The numbers bear it out. You know, the San Antonio run was great. But it'll be interesting to see if that can happen again here in the next 25 years. It was great while it happened, for sure. Well, can it happen again? Remains to be seen now with what things are out there and what's available to these guys. Hopefully it can, because obviously this is a small market. And 25 years from now, when I'm not doing this job, I'm going to be rooting for the Jazz to win it all, because they try to do things the right way. And their goal is to try to win it all. And they don't tolerate nonsense that gets in the way of that goal. So that's all the things that they have to figure out. And it's going to be intriguing, as it always is. You know, very rarely do you have a completely quiet summer. I don't know that the Jazz have really had that many. Maybe this year that would have, it's going to be one. I don't know. You know, they may be playing games in the summer. So under normal circumstances, this potentially could have been a quiet summer. But then you amp it right back up again next year, because there's a bunch of guys who are going to become free agents. And what do they do? And that's what makes it intriguing. And we go back, you know, this last season, adding Bogdanovich and Conley, that wasn't a quiet summer. Those are major additions. And do they need more players like the skill set of Bogdanovich, who offensively can do a lot of different things? He has the ability to shoot from the outside, from beyond the line, also can hit the mid-range, can drive. He needs to work on his passing a little bit more, for sure. But he has a varied offensive package. And is that the way you want to go? My inclination is to say, yes, that's the way you want to go.
A number that I'd be intrigued in, that I'll try to get a hold of David Locke here and see if he can dig up before he comes on with us Friday, he's usually on with us every Friday, is what percentage do the Jazz shoot from three when Rudy's on the floor, and what percentage do they shoot when he's off the floor? Because we always talk about stretching the defense, right? The receiver in football who takes the top off the defense, and then the three-point shooter who opens up the floor so other guys can drive. But in an era where there's four or five offensive players beyond the three-point line, then the defense can go out and pressure them, right? So the guy, the one dimension that Rudy provides is what Locke was saying, I think it was last time he was on with us, but I've heard him on other shows, maybe he was on The Big Show or whatever, and he said the number one thing teams want is dunks, and no one gets more dunks than Rudy.
Yeah.
That's got a lot of value. So if his ability to not only dunk, but to threaten, be a threat to dunk on every possession, does that open up more threes for guys? Or do we find out that the percentage and volume of threes that they take is the same whether he's on or off the floor?
Yeah, I think that's a little misleading, though, because when he's off the floor, it's not like they're putting a three-point shooter on the floor. They're most likely putting Tony Bradley. He's not a threat.
What would happen if they had a three-point shooter who was a center and we could measure what they did with five guys out?
Right, but they they don't have that.
Right.
So that would be in the future. I see where you're going, and that's what I think they need, whether it's nothing more than a backup who's going to play 15 minutes.
Change of pace.
Right now, they don't have that. Bradley and
Ed Davis.
Gobert, they're one-dimensional offensive players. And I think that they made the addition of Bogdanovich, obviously they desperately needed that. There's no question. Now they got to see, because this, I don't think this game is going back. You know, I talked about the other day, I was watching a 1984 playoff game. they're going on the Pistons, and they put up a little pop-up. The Jazz led the league this year, that year in three-point attempts, and it was 3.9. And I think it was either this year or last year. The Rockets led with 43. That is so massive. The difference between those two numbers is incredible. So it's clear that they need a big man who can shoot the three. Well, they got it in Bogdanovich. Well, now that I don't know that they necessarily need a full-time big man who can shoot the three, but it seems like they need another one to give them that opportunity. The more weapons you're going to give Quinn Snyder, the better he's going to be as a coach and the better the team is going to be. So they've got to figure out how to acquire that. What do they do for that? And how does that relate to what they're going to pay Gobert? It's all very intriguing and something that we're going to monitor and discuss ad nauseum over the next, as you said, 6 to 16 months.
DJ and PK, it's 97.5 and 1280 The Zone. Tyson Alger, Oregon Ducks writer for The Athletic, is coming up.
And now, attention, top of the wire on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Dennis Lindsay says the Jazz will be cautious in reopening the Zions Bank Basketball Center to individual player workouts. His quote, my best guess is that it will be after May 8th. That, by the way, is the date the NBA has set when teams can open facilities. Lindsay continued, that's because we want to make sure the facility meets all the league specifications, the local and state health official protocols, and we're going to be even a little bit more stringent than those standards and create our own standards. NFL news, 16-year NFL veteran Frank Gore signed a one-year deal with the New York Jets. Gore will turn 37 a week from tomorrow. He is the NFL's third all-time leading rusher with a chance to become the second leading rusher. Figures to lighten the workload on the Jets' star back, Le'Veon Bell. Top of the Wire is brought to you by Action Plumbing. Action Plumbing, heating and electrical. Spring into action now. Mention this ad and receive $33 off any service. Call Action today at 801-833-3333. That's 801-833-3333.
Take the Zone with you wherever you go.
Let's go.
Download the all-new Zone Sports Network app on your phone and get live streaming of the Zone as well as podcast editions of every show. From Salt Lake to Shanghai, Provo to Portugal, or Ogden to Oslo, wherever you go, we'll tag along.
Let's go.
Download the new Zone app by searching Zone Sports Network wherever you shop for apps. It's the Zone Sports Network app from 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
DJ and PK, our spring football tour continues with Tyson Alger, Oregon Ducks writer, for The Athletic, and he joins us on the Sprint Special guest line. Sprint makes it safe and easy to get what you need online. Visit Sprint.com for online services and local store availability. Tyson, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, before we get to the Ducks and this team coming up, I saw a headline this morning, and you can kind of explain to us and our listeners what's going on as much as you know. You know, here everybody thinks of the Oregon Ducks as the Nike Ducks, right? Phil Knight is there. He has spared no expense, building buildings, paying staff and all that. So it seems like if Oregon has a quarterback who's a high first-round draft pick, he would immediately be a Nike guy, but apparently that's not true. What's going on?
Oh, man, I haven't seen this story. So
John Canzano wrote something that the sixth pick in the draft, and he's not signing with Nike, and what the heck is up there? I don't know. It's kind of a footnote. What do I care who someone signs with apparel? But I guess I just always – I don't see much daylight between Nike and the Oregon Athletic Department, so I just kind of assumed.
Yeah, that would surprise me. Yeah, I mean, it especially, and like I said, I haven't seen the story yet, but I mean, you know, Herbert grew up in kind of like the Oregon environment and around Nike and all that. So, you know, you kind of assume that Oregon's top athletes are, I mean, like when Sabrina Ionescu was drafted by New York, like everyone just knew that she was going to sign with Nike. So, that's a little surprising to me because, I mean, like if you go back 5 years ago when like Marcus Mariota was coming in, like it was an absolute sure thing that Mariota was going to be a Nike athlete. So, yeah, that would be surprising to me.
Hmm. So I got three or four candidates here. Who's replacing Herbert?
It's probably going to be Tyler Shuck. He was Herbert's backup last year. He'll be a redshirt sophomore this year. The tough thing, especially with losing this spring, though, is, you know, none of these guys behind him that were on the roster have really had any playing time. I mean, Herbert was a 4-year starter, so basically all Shuck's been able to do is kind of get some mop-up duty when the Ducks are up big. But they did bring in this grad transfer from Boston College, Anthony Brown, who's actually a pretty good player. Just the only thing is he's coming off of like back-to-back ACL injuries, so he's obviously limited and kind of on the come up a little bit. But from what we've been able to see from Tyler Shuck, like he should be able to command this offense, and he has a lot of talent. It's just, you know, we all know it's different once the real games happen and everything's happening at full speed. So that's kind of where Oregon's at right now. That's really the biggest question they had this spring, because they bring back an absolutely loaded defense, and while they do lose a lot of pieces on the offensive line, they had a really talented second unit last year. So quarterback's definitely the big question now.
C.J. Verdell comes back at running back, coming off a couple of 1,000-yard seasons, and most impressively, his per carry went from 5 yards a carry to 6.2. Do you expect another jump in production, or that O-line issue you referenced, is that going to put a little bit of ceiling on what he can do?
I think Verdell still has a higher ceiling if he can stay healthy, but that's been the biggest thing for him. You know, if you watch the way he runs, he's a little cannonball. He's not a huge guy. I mean, he's stocky, but he's only about 5'10", and he just runs over guys and runs at dudes. So every week it seems like he's got some sort of, like, you know, bruise or bump or, you know, some is limited in some regard. So if he can actually stay healthy for a year, I don't think he's reached his potential. Now, obviously, you know, I don't expect the line to be better this year than it was last year, because the line was pretty darn good last year, but I don't expect it to take a significant drop off next season. But yeah, it's funny, because like there are some games where you'll watch Verdell and you just think, like, man, this kid's probably the best runner in the Pac-12, but then like he'll just disappear in some other games, and I think a lot of that is just due to him being a little bit injury prone.
Everybody's going through this, but without the spring ball, how much do you think it's going to affect the Ducks, considering they have coordinators who are new on both sides of the ball?
Right. So on offense, it's going to be it'll be different. I mean, luckily they were able to get Moorhead in there like in late January, and they were able to get 4 practices in. So, I mean, obviously that's not the 15. It's not close to it, but they do have some tape, and they are able to kind of show players what they were doing right, what they were doing wrong. But yeah, I mean, obviously it's not an ideal situation. Fortunately, I do think Moorhead's system is, you know, it's not familiar to what Arroyo was running by any means. Like, this is going to be a lot more high tempo, a lot more quarterback running, but it is very similar to what Oregon was running when like Chip Kelly was here. So there are a couple stalwarts still kind of like on the staff or as analysts that were around during that time that can help with that transition. And then, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, they do have a new cornerbacks coach in Rod Chance, but that's a veteran group. Andy Avalos, the defensive coordinator, is coming back for his second season. I think that guy's probably a head coach candidate following this year. I mean, he absolutely transformed Oregon's defense last year, which was already a good defense from the year before that. He's young, he's kind of up and coming. So if they put together another good defensive season, keep an eye out for him on kind of the head coaching trail.
You know, the receiving core didn't really have a star necessarily, even though they had a couple of NFL guys. So you got to replace now Jacob Breeland, the tight end, is off to, I think it was the Ravens, and Juwan Johnson to the Saints. Is it going to be kind of the whole committee thing? Are they going to have depth and be able to spread the ball around to 3, 4, 5 receivers? Or are we going to see, with the new offensive coordinator, maybe you focus on a couple of the returning guys and maybe there's a 1,000-yard receiver this year?
Yeah, it's interesting because they do bring Johnny Johnson back, who I believe was around like 800 or 900 yards last year, and it was a very quiet 800 or 900 yards. You know, he was a guy that kind of just kind of quietly put up numbers, and was never overly spectacular until, I mean, he had a couple just circus catches in the Pac-12 title game. But, you know, I expect him and Jalen Redd to kind of be like the two most consistent guys. But then again, as we talked about, they got a new quarterback. You got a guy that's developing relationships with new guys and chemistry. But they do have a fair amount of like redshirt freshman, sophomore type receivers that could be pretty intriguing this year. This kid, Brian Addison, he's like 6'5" and he can jump out of the gym. And then they got a USC transfer last year that had to sit out, Devin Williams. He's like 6'5" too. And that's something that Oregon really, outside of Juwan Johnson last year, they didn't really have any like big bodied traditional kind of like red zone type receivers. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how some of those younger kids get worked in through the mix this year.
So, I know Utah still has nightmares about number 5 defensively getting all over the place. I know they got just about everybody, even got backups in the defensive secondary coming back. But Kayvon Thibodeau, I could argue, is right now today the best player or the best player to cause disruption in the Pac-12, can't I?
Yeah, he was absolutely amazing to watch last year because you could just see him get exponentially better each week. I mean, if you go and look at his season last year, he didn't do anything for the first 4 games, and then you could just kind of see him figure it out. And you know, he finishes with 9 sacks over like the season's like last 9 games, and in the Pac-12 title game and in the Rose Bowl. I mean, guys just couldn't block him. His first step and just some of the techniques with his hands are just incredible, especially for a guy that was a true freshman last year. This guy was a true freshman on the defensive line, and he was undersized. He's added weight this offseason. He's gotten stronger. Between Penei Sewell, who could potentially be a top 3 pick in next year's draft, and then Thibodeau, who could be a top 3 pick in the year after his draft. Oregon's got pretty high top-end talent right now.
We're joined right now by Tyson Alger, Oregon Ducks writer for The Athletic. So, special teams, you know, usually in the Pac-12, no matter how good you are, there's a couple close games, there's an upset. So, kicking can matter. Camden Lewis, as a freshman, had one of the oddest stat lines. The guy was 5 of 6 outside of 30 yards, but he was 4 of 8 on field goals shorter than 30 yards. What was going on? Has that been fixed? Because that's pretty deflating to get down there close and miss a chip shot field goal.
You know, I don't think Oregon's going to know if it's fixed until about 5 minutes into the first quarter against North Dakota State. And maybe not actually that. It might be next week against Ohio State, because I think he had the yips, because you watch this kid in practice and he's got a heck of a leg. And he has been able to just kind of punt, I mean, just boot some of those longer kicks. But, like, if you had him in between, like, 20 and 30 yards, it felt like it was 50-50 at best. And, you know, I really felt bad for him last year because, like, if a kicker is the easiest position to pile on, because it's you either made it or you didn't. And he's, like, he was 18 years old. Oregon had already booted a kicker from the start of the year, and then he just missed, like, he had a 2 or 3 week stretch where it was just like Oregon was going that for it from like 4th and 25, just because they didn't believe that they had a kicker that could make it. So they did bring in a couple walk-on kickers. So there will be a continued competition. That was something that they were hoping to figure out this spring. But that is certainly the big glaring weakness of this Oregon roster right now.
Also, too, in that Pac-12 title game, the safety Brady Breeze played very well. And I think he was too the Rose Bowl defensive MVP. He's coming back for his senior year. Was that a surprise? Because is he an NFL guy and could have gone?
Nah, absolutely not. He couldn't have gone. The Pac-12 title game was like the second game he's ever started in his career. You know, this has been a kid who had been a career backup, like one of those guys that was always like, you know, the coach would come out on Tuesday and be like, oh, Brady Breeze is practicing really hard, and then you just never see him play. But he got an opportunity in the USC game because I think Nick Pickett left with a targeting call, and, like, he just took that and ran with it. And I've never seen a player of his size, he's not that big of a guy, just lay the lumber like he does. Like he was all over the place in the Pac-12 title game, in the Rose Bowl. He ran that fumble back for a touchdown. It really creates an interesting situation for the secondary this year, because they were supposed to have like 4 really good dudes in that secondary set, and he wasn't initially part of the plan, but he played so well over the season's last 4 or 5 weeks that, like, I think it would be pretty hard to keep him out of the starting lineup, because I thought outside of Thibodeau, he was the most impactful player on that defensive roster for the last couple of weeks last season.
That was awesome. On Tuesday, he's playing really well. So that happens everywhere, huh?
Yeah. Coach, who looks good this week? Well, let me figure that out.
So Oregon had a run of 7 straight years of double-digit win seasons. It seemed like it would never end, 2008 to 2014. Then there's 4 straight seasons where they don't reach double digits, and the losses really pile up. A couple coaching changes in there, but Cristobal 12-2 in his second year, Pac-12 title, win the Rose Bowl. Is Oregon back on track? Do they have things in place for another run like we saw?
Yeah, I think so. It's hard for me to sit here and predict that they'll have like any sort of success that mirrors, you know, like that 3-4 year run under Chip Kelly, where they maybe lost like 5 games in that whole span. But then again, like, hardly any team in college football can reach that. But I think Oregon's completely at a stage right now where they should expect a 10-win season at minimum and be able to compete for a Pac-12 title. I think that between the stability they have in their coaching staff, most of the staff has been on campus here for now about 3 years or so, including like the Taggart. Most of them were assistant coaches with Taggart. And then mix that in with like the recruiting classes that they've been able to bring in. I mean, Oregon's been successful in the years past, but they've never brought in recruits like this. So I think everything's pointing towards them being pretty solid here in kind of the Pac-12's top tier for at least the next few years going forward.
I'm intrigued about how Oregon wants to schedule, because it looks like they're playing one big-time non-conference game, and we don't know how the schedule is going to play out this year. But they're scheduled in the second week of the season to have Ohio State in Eugene, I think it is, too. And we know that last year they, go play Auburn, I think it was, there, and they lose the game. And I ask you about the scheduling, because I'm pretty sure that since the conference expanded and went to the 2 divisions, nobody's gone through undefeated. So you count a loss probably somewhere along the line. And last year the Ducks got upset by the Devils in Tempe. We talked about it, how a first-round draft choice, a receiver, got loose there and scored a touchdown on a bomb at the end of the game. And so the point being, why go with a big-time non-conference game? Because if you lose that, and then you lose one conference game by 3 points, all of a sudden you're out, and you're not being considered for the playoff. And, if you lose to Ohio State, if 2 losses is going to take a Pac-12 team out, no matter what, it seems, why bother to play those big-time non-conference games?
Yeah, it's a tough situation, because I agree with everything you just said. I mean, if you look at Oregon's season last year, if they would have played a cupcake in week one, that ASU loss might have not taken them out of the entire playoff running. At the same time, if you kind of look through Oregon's history, they've done this a lot over the last 20 years. They play pretty big marquee non-conference games. You can go back like the back-to-back top 10 years with Michigan State, or the year that they played LSU coming off of the national title game. That's kind of, they like that. They like getting those early season headlines. I mean, basically Auburn and Oregon controlled the preseason hype narrative for about 2 months last season going into that August game at Cowboy Stadium. So it's certainly risky. But I think from a marketing standpoint, Oregon really likes that. Because if you go back to kind of like the origin of like when Oregon started becoming more of a national known commodity, like they would just do stuff all the time just to get their name out in the headlines and that sort of thing. And I, obviously, 20 years later, I don't feel like that anything needs to do that nearly as much. But they're certainly grateful for that, for those like that TV advertisement and the headlines and all that. And, if they win, then it's a mute point. But I mean, Ohio State looks really good this year, so I don't know if that's going to happen. But it's a tough situation, because I mean, from my perspective, I would much rather cover them playing in Ohio State or in Auburn or whoever than like a Portland State or a San Jose State. But this is college football, and we all know how you get to the playoff, and that shows that might not be the best way to do it.
Tyson, we appreciate a few minutes. Thanks for talking Duck football with us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
He's Tyson Alger, Oregon Ducks writer, working for The Athletic, covering Oregon. When we come back, your feedback on today's show. Stay with us.
And it's over, almost here.
Don't go nowhere.
DJ and PK brought to you in part by Audi Salt Lake City, where you can pick up a new Audi Q5 SUV for only $359 per month. Visit Audi Salt Lake City at 999 South State or AudiSaltLakeCity.com. People have been tweeting at us all morning long. Are you satisfied that the Gobert-Mitchell saga is over now that Dennis Lindsay addressed it and says it is so? And I can tell you, there is no unity in the community, PK.
I hate that.
There are people who were over it before it began. People are over it once Rudy talked about it. People will not be over it until they hear Donovan talk about it. Denny says, listening to Dennis, not even. That was a scripted PR response. Joe says, nope.
Well, I definitely think it was a prepared response. I don't know if it was literally scripted, but obviously he knew the question was coming, and he had rehearsed an answer, as he should. You should be prepared for all questions. I think the goal in any type, this is basically a press conference, you know, it's done on Zoom, and you and I were on it, is that you need to anticipate the questions. You need to go over them in your mind so you know how to answer them. So that's standard practice for anybody in Dennis Lindsay's position.
Clint says, Rudy Gobert. He tweets at us today. Only four NBA players have signed a Supermax extension. Curry, Harden, Westbrook, and Wall. Yes, players changing teams aren't going to be eligible for the Supermax. Part of the Supermax is you have to stay with the team. So when you're Durant changing teams, you're not eligible. When you're LeBron changing teams, you're not eligible.
Mike Conley actually signed the first Supermax deal.
That was a Supermax when he did?
It doesn't have the same number attached to it because the salary cap. Yeah. He was the first Supermax.
And I remember raising an eyebrow. Is Mike Conley, who's a good player, is he that good? And it's the same thing with John Wall. Now, set aside the injury, is John Wall that good of a player? It's something that we talked about for years in terms of just because he's your best player doesn't mean he should be getting the max or the super max.
So we'll get into this many more times, I'm sure, before we get to that point. But of the four players that Clint listed, only one has won a title, Curry. Harden went to the finals as the third best player with Oklahoma City. Westbrook went to the finals as the second best player with Durant in Oklahoma City. Wall has not been to the NBA Finals. I think one thing that these clubs all have to measure is if we don't spend the money on this guy, who are we going to get and is it going to make us better? And if we have to go back a step to go two steps forward, how long will it be before we're better again? And you got to ask yourself all those questions. You know, in the Jazz case, if not Gobert, then who? And how good are we, and how much longer till we get back to this level, and how much longer till we're better? All questions that have to be asked and answered.
Yeah, never-ending list of questions, and when the list ends, it just starts back up at A again and goes through the alphabet. Yeah, these are constantly questions that every franchise is asking themselves and answering to one degree or another. Sometimes the summers or the off seasons that you have, the questions that you answer are of the utmost importance, and then there's levels of questions specifically related to the level of talent that you're involving the players with. Yeah, I mean, it's just something that they have to do over and over and over again. And I would say that the Supermax on the other three were worth it, but Wall, no. Even without the injury, now the injury compounds it, but even without the injury, I don't think he was that type of player.
All right, you can hit up the Twitter feed. There's a lot of, we got multiple people saying Gobert is not a Supermax player. You can't win a title. Or White Crisco thinks Gobert will be traded before the contract comes up. Clint, stop trying to tear the Jazz apart, David, all caps. That was before Clint set in the list of Supermax players. All right, so you can click on the feed and look at the mentions, and you can read them all for yourself. There's a lot of opinions there, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of opinions over the next, we don't really know. Normally it would be 14 months, right, till you get to that July 1 date, but we don't know that July 1 is going to remain the date. If they shift the schedule, then does the date move to October 1 or whatever?
Well, it's so, next season, whenever the dates are.
All right, we're out of time. Hans and Scotty are coming up next. We'll talk to you.